Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Costco Business Center, offering delivery to Anchorage Air Cargo companies for shipments to rural Alaska for business and home. More at CostcoBusinessDelivery.com.
Good morning, Alaska. You are listening to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. Okay. Traumatic events are fairly commonplace in the human experience. Most of us know what it feels like to fear for our lives, or we may have grown up in a violent home. Maybe you've been the victim of sexual violence, or you may have witnessed a violent death of a loved one or a close friend. These events usually leave us in a heightened state of arousal even after the event has passed. In most cases, our brains calm down. We quit having bad dreams, and hypervigilance will lessen, returning us to a state of balance. Unfortunately, for almost 20% of people who live through a significant exposure to trauma, the feelings of the experience can get stuck in place, causing the primitive brain to recycle the trauma as if it is still happening. On today's program, we are joined by trauma survivor Michael Baldwin and trauma expert Dr. Deborah Korn. Please stay with us for the next hour as we explore the impacts of trauma and listen to Michael's remarkable experience with eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy, better known as EMDR. Welcome to the program. I appreciate you both taking the time to join me.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right, we're a little frazzled this morning. I had to pull my daughter out of the ditch. We got our first snowfall, and of course, every 16-year-old thinks they know everything about how to drive on snow. So she had a little lesson and didn't tear anything up too bad. And she's okay.
She's okay?
Yep. So I rolled in here about 5 minutes ago, and I'm trying to get all this stuff put together. I do have you on video, which is nice. I guess let's start off with the two of you telling us, I guess, a little bit about your background and why you're with me today on the show. And we can start with Michael.
Thanks for having us. My background is career-wise, I spent about 35 years in advertising. And the context for this discussion is that I, as an adult, was suffering from a lot of different symptoms like anxiety and depression and nightmares and phobias, but never had any idea why. And I spent about 22 years looking for answers with what ended up being about 7 different therapists over that period of time. And it was only until I met Dr. Jeffrey Magnavita did I discover the phenomenon called trauma, which has never been mentioned to me before by any previous therapist, and EMDR therapy. And I'm here because I wanted to create a book with an EMDR expert, in this case it's Deborah Korn, to help other people like myself who knew nothing about trauma and knew nothing about EMDR therapy in a very accessible way to introduce them to both.
All right. Mm-hmm. It seems almost unimaginable that you got through 7 years and or 7 different therapists and nobody, you know, explored that that arena with you, because we are, you know, at least today, there's a lot more information about more mm-hmm. subtle traumas and complex traumas, which we will get into as we move along. But that's really interesting that, I guess, maybe how long ago was it when you were doing all that stuff, all the therapy?
Oh, I started in my 20s.
Okay. So that was when PTSD, I guess, was thought of as major wartime mm-hmm. acts of violence. All right. Well, that makes a little more sense. I'm like, how could nobody pick that up? All right. So Dr. Korn, why don't you give us a little bit about what you're doing? I understand you've been with in EMDR since really early on.
Yeah. Well, as a newbie therapist, while I was still in graduate school, I discovered that 9 times out of 10, no matter what issues brought people into treatment, there seemed to be a history of trauma beneath the surface. And I made a commitment really early on to learn everything I could about treating trauma. But the field of trauma-informed treatment was still in its infancy at that time. We still had a lot to learn. You know, I chose to work with combat veterans, with rape survivors, with families of murder victims, police officers, and men and women who had experienced significant childhood abuse and neglect as I tried to get my head around how to treat trauma-related problems. And then in the summer of 1991, I traveled back to Denver, Colorado, where I'd gone to graduate school to visit my graduate school mentor, Andy Sweet. And I was telling Andy how frustrated I was feeling with the limitations of the treatment models available to me when treating chronic trauma survivors. And, you know, Andy said to me, "Debbie, you need to listen to me. There's this new therapy called EMDR, and it's something quite unique. It looks and sounds kind of wacky, but I'm getting remarkable results with it. And you must go and get trained in it." And, you know, he said, basically, you have to run, not walk. And so I ran and I got trained with Francine Shapiro, who is the developer of EMDR, later that year. And at the time of my introductory EMDR training, I was the clinical director of an inpatient psychiatric unit specializing in the treatment of women recovering from both acute and chronic trauma. And I was treating women struggling with severe suicidal ideation and self-injury, eating disorders, addictions. And some of them had made very serious suicide attempts. And I used EMDR every single day, starting the day after I completed my training, over many years on this inpatient unit. And I was absolutely blown away by the results that I saw. I saw significant decreases in PTSD and other trauma-related symptoms like depression and anxiety and phobias. And I basically watched as women on my unit moved from feeling hopeless to feeling hopeful. And through their EMDR work, I watched them shift from feeling powerless and not good enough to feeling powerful and more than worthy. And I had the honor of becoming a faculty member at the EMDR Institute, Dr. Shapiro's Training Institute, in 1993, and started teaching and consulting all over the world about applying EMDR with complex post-traumatic stress disorder and dissociative disorders. And basically the rest is history. But the bottom line was that I was drawn to EMDR because it was effective and efficient and tolerable for patients. And I loved that EMDR attended to emotions and the body and people's belief systems, and that it seemed to tap into people's innate healing system.
All right. That's... Yeah, that's a great introduction. Excuse me. Thank you. I trained in EMDR myself I did the first and second trainings and used it for, this was maybe 10 years ago, and I used it for a couple of years pretty regularly. I think my ADD myself got in the way of, because it's very process oriented, it's very step oriented, and it's not just like moving your fingers back and forth and then people are miraculously healed. There is a specific process and targeted stuff. And we will go into more of the mechanisms and why you think it works. But I, you know, I was like you, I kind of like, this is really weird and we're going to move our, you know, fingers back and forth and you're going to follow it. And then you're just going to go through your own process of healing, which was, really interesting to be sort of, client led. And without the therapist introducing their own motivations and feelings involved with it. So we'll get into that. But I saw some remarkable shifts and quickly, like you said, particularly with some phobias and some high panic kind of situations. So I've seen it in action. I've done it myself as a patient. I went and did some EMDR and had some interesting experiences there. So, Michael, I'd like to, I think, get into why you wrote this book. What was the idea behind it? I mean, you kind of gave us a little snippet of it, but you were clearly frustrated with the amount of time it took and then really pretty amazed at the results you had with the EMDR. So can you talk about what that journey was like a little bit and why you decided this to write this book in the way that you did? It's interesting.
Sure. So because, as I said, the concept of trauma was new until I met Dr. Magdavita. I had never done EMDR therapy before Dr. Magdavita. So this is all new to me and was also completely different from the very first time I saw him. So I would say in the first 6 months of working with Dr. Magdavita on a weekly basis, I started to understand these concepts, various ones about trauma, how it works, how it affects us, how it's locked in the nervous system, things like that, and things about EMDR therapy. And I, as a part of my sort of developmental history, was I couldn't read, I couldn't let things in. My brain was kind of short-circuited. So I'm a very visual thinker. So I started putting images to symbolize these concepts with very little text opposite, and what we now call billboards in the book, to capture a concept like, for example, trauma is, it's not able to be processed like normal day-to-day events. So it gets locked in the central nervous system. So I picked a picture of a guy, you know, actually happens to be the president of the Amber Institute in Denmark, holding a piece of amber with a flower that's 35 million years old in the amber that's perfectly preserved, to give people from all over the world, it doesn't matter what culture or language, a visual anchor for that notion that trauma gets locked and perfectly preserved in the nervous system. I did about 3 or 4, maybe 6 of those, and I shared them at some point with Dr. Magdavita, and he said, you know, Michael, this could be a book. All you need to do is go out and find an EMDR therapist who's willing to write a book with you who doesn't know you from Adam. And I look back now, that what on earth was I thinking? And I reached out to everyone, starting with Bessel van der Kolk, Bruce Perry, Judith, Christine Gertrude, everyone. And Dr. Magdavita introduced me to Debbie Korn. And Debbie was the one who stuck with me. Debbie was the one who kind of was vetting me and vetting the process and talking to Dr. Magdavita. And Debbie was the one who finally committed to do the book. So I wanted a book to be for the lay public, that decoded trauma for the lay public, and that introduced EMDR therapy for the lay public in totally accessible terms. And all I presented to the publisher at the time was 6 billboards and an idea. I had no co-author, I had no table of contents, I had no sample chapter. They were immediately interested. And that was Workman Publishing, who's our publisher. So that's how it started. And then, you know, once Debbie committed and engaged, we just began the process of creating this book.
And it's it's really well done. The pictures, I think, add a lot, and the little snapshot sort of statements as you go through the book that just kind of sum up the process of trauma and then the process of EMDR and how it works, and it makes it really simple. I mean, I've interviewed Dr. van der Kolk a couple times here and read his book several times, Body Keeps the Score, and it is a complex, dense
yes.
academic exercise.
Yes, it is.
Fascinating, much of it, and the science, but it's really detailed. And your book is like, there's pictures and little like quotes, and you can thumb through it and have a really neat experience and sort of understand things better. So, Deborah, can you start us, like, give us sort of a quick 101. Well, before I do that, I totally forgot to tell people how they can join us, because we are a listener driven show. We love to have guests call in and ask their own questions. And I did not do that in my haste this morning. So if you're just joining us today, I have Michael Baldwin, who is a trauma survivor and advertising executive, and decided to write a book about EMDR. And he enlisted the help of EMDR expert Dr. Deborah Korn, and we were talking about their book, Every Memory Deserves Respect, EMDR, the Proven Trauma Therapy with the Power to Heal. If you have a question for my guests or a comment about today's topic, you can reach us in 3 ways. In Anchorage, our local phone number is 907-550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, you can call us at 1-888-353-5752. And you can also email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org. You got to spell out line1, L-I-N-E-O-N-E. So please don't hesitate to call. Most people call in the last 5 to 10 minutes, and oftentimes we cannot get them on, unfortunately. So call early, and we'll get you on the air. Okay, Dr. Korn, yes, can you get us give us a brief education on trauma, and then a little bit about EMDR and how it works?
So let's start with trauma. So trauma is a part of life, right? 70% of adults, 75% of adults have experienced at least one significant trauma in their lifetime. Only about 20% of those go on to develop post-traumatic stress disorder, but trauma is a part of life. We define trauma in our book as any experience that feels overwhelming, triggers strong negative emotions, shame or terror, and involves a sense of powerlessness or intense vulnerability. And I always like to say that trauma is both objective and subjective. It's both the event and the experience of the event. So no two people are going to experience a single event in the same way. No two people are going to have the same response to what they experience. So it's not just what happened to you or happens to you, but also what happens inside of you as a result of your exposure to a certain event or series of events. And we know that the greater number of traumas, the greater the psychological toll, the greater the physical toll. We know that trauma is cumulative, that it's developmentally bound. And what that means is the younger you are, the more vulnerable you are to being affected by that trauma. Now, as you said, we used to only take note of big T traumas, right? Events that most anyone would consider traumatic, shock traumas, where the person perceives a potential threat to their survival or the survival of loved ones. So here we're talking about childhood sexual, physical or emotional abuse, rape or physical assault, the traumatic death or murder of a loved one, combat-related trauma, devastation related to environmental disasters. Over time, we have learned about the impact of what we call little t traumas, what we might call developmental traumas or attachment trauma, experiences that people might not necessarily recognize as traumatic, or events that might not necessarily meet the formal diagnostic manual criteria for so-called, quote, trauma. So here we're talking about criticism or covert bullying or experiences of betrayal or experiences involving humiliation or failure or aloneness, subtle microaggressions, as well as blatant discrimination or hostility related to race or ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation. Examples of little t trauma in adulthood might be a divorce or losing a job or a difficult move or the discovery of a partner's affair. And examples in childhood might be feeling ignored or feeling different or unable to somehow measure up or feeling powerless in a crazy, chaotic family or alcoholic family. And lastly, in terms of trauma 101, we've come to realize that trauma can involve both omission and commission. And when we talk about commission, we're referring to the things that happen to you. Again, an assault, childhood abuse, a car accident, a traumatic loss. When we refer to omission, we're talking about situations where things should have happened, things were supposed to happen but didn't. So situations where someone was not properly protected or listened to or cared for or valued, experiences of neglect or deprivation, abandonment or alienation. So that's kind of trauma 101. Would you like me to just go right into EMDR, how EMDR layers on top of that?
Well, I think we'll do that when we come back from our break, because we're almost up at our first break, and then we'll start off fresh with EMDR. But listening to you talk, I think about all the young people that I work with in their 20s, early 20s, late teens that are really struggling with social phobias and just this terror of going out. And you know, and the pandemic has compounded that when kids have been stuck at home and some critical developmental times, 12, 13, 14 for socialization. But I think of this, you know, we're not talking, a little T is not like somebody picked on you and called you poopy head, right? Like what it, it is like a pattern, consistent pattern of bullying over years and traumatizing. I've heard some bullying stories that like leave these kids, and one of the essential agents is, or conditions as I understand for a trauma to sort of shift from a post-traumatic stress response to a disorder is this sense of powerlessness and a lack of agency, as Vanderkolt calls it, so critical to being able to protect yourself. And if you don't, if you feel that powerlessness, that's the ultimate sort of fear. All right, we are at our first break, like I mentioned. So if you're just tuning in late, my guests today are trauma survivor Michael Baldwin and psychologist Dr. Deborah Korn. Today we are discussing their new book, Every Memory Deserves Respect, EMDR, the Proven Trauma Therapy with the Power to Heal. If you have a question for us today or a comment about our topic, give us a call or send us an email. In Anchorage, we're at 907-550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. After this short break, we will continue with more of our conversation. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You are listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line 1 on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Welcome back to Line 1, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us, my guests today are Michael Baldwin and psychologist Dr. Deborah Korn. We are discussing their new book, Every Memory Deserves Respect, EMDR, the Proven Trauma Therapy with the Power to Heal. If anybody is looking for a great introduction to EMDR and trauma, this is a simple and fun read with a sort of setup as a back and forth between Michael and Dr. Korn, giving different ideas from the both the patient and the professional perspective, which is one of the pieces that I really like about that. All right, Dr. Korn, can you go back to our previous, their previous question about EMDR? What is it? How does it work? What could somebody expect if they were to seek it out?
Okay. Well, first of all, EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a mouthful. Desensitization refers to the reduction of distress, fear, anxiety. Reprocessing refers to the reevaluation or the restructuring of thoughts and beliefs and kind of the transformation of one's sense of self relative to past traumatic experiences. It's about moving the past fully into the past. And then there's the eye movement component. Now, Francine Shapiro, the developer of EMDR, accidentally discovered that purposely moving your eyes horizontally back and forth while focusing on a traumatic memory leads to a reduction in the vividness and the emotional intensity of the memory. She developed an effective protocol for treating PTSD and trauma-related problems using bilateral stimulation, what we call bilateral stimulation, or back and forth eye movements. And she published the first research study on this approach in 1989, working with rape survivors and Vietnam combat veterans. So hence the name eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. Now, EMDR is a memory-focused psychotherapy that helps people deal with the impact and the legacy of trauma and adverse experiences in their lives. It's based on the idea that psychological problems are related to a failure to adequately process traumatic experiences, traumatic memories. And these unprocessed traumatic memories, as Michael said, remain frozen or locked in our nervous system. And they continue to affect how we perceive things, the decisions we make, the reactions we have, the beliefs we hold about ourselves and others. And then along come present day triggers, you know, events that somehow resemble the original trauma in actuality or thematically. And these triggers activate these unprocessed traumatic memories, leading to symptoms that cause ongoing distress. And in EMDR therapy, we help clients access and activate their unprocessed traumatic memories with a set of focused questions, like what picture represents the worst part of this experience for you? What's the negative belief about yourself that comes up when you think about this experience? What are the emotions and the sensations connected to this experience when you bring it right up front, right here, right now? So we ask a set of focused questions to jumpstart the brain's information processing system. And with EMDR reprocessing, there are shifts in thoughts and feelings and behaviors and physical sensations. And healing involves kind of spontaneous movement toward more positive thinking and more manageable feelings, and a significant reduction in the level of distress experienced in one's body. And if you were a fly on the wall, in early sessions, you would see a therapist taking a thorough history, coming up with a treatment plan collaboratively with the client, kind of establishing safety and trust within the therapeutic relationship, focusing on resourcing or skill building work if that's needed to make sure that a client is ready to approach challenging emotional material. And, you know, it's suffice it to say that most people don't show up at a therapist door saying, hello, I'm here to work on my memory from age 5 or age 7,
right?
Most people walk through the door and they're falling apart. They're miserable. They're having trouble coping. They're having marital problems or PTSD symptoms. So we often begin with the client's current distress and we float back. We look for the roots of the distress. When did the distress begin? What is it linked to? And we search for relevant memories to target in our work together. And once a target memory is identified, we activate the memory, as I said, through the series of questions. And then we introduce 30 to 60 second sets of eye movements or bilateral back and forth stimulation to jumpstart the brain's stalled information processing system. And over the years, that we've discovered that other forms of bilateral stimulation are also effective in reducing distress beyond eye movements. So we might have a client track our fingers with their eyes as the fingers move back and forth laterally or horizontally, or we might have a client track a light that moves back and forth, or we might have them listen to alternating tones, or we might tap back and forth on their hands as they rest them in their lap. And by the way, during the pandemic, we discovered that EMDR can be done virtually with equally positive outcomes. But with every set of bilateral stimulation, the client is asked to simply notice what changes or emerges and to report images, thoughts, feelings, sensations, insights. We encourage them to just notice, to be a passenger on a train, just watching the scenery go by, always staying connected to the present moment, just witnessing from a distance, right? And I say again and again to my clients, it's old stuff. It's just a memory. Just notice, just let it go by. We really emphasize keeping one foot in the present at all times while accessing the past. And after every set of bilateral stimulation, we simply ask, what do you get now? What do you notice? What's changing? And there's no supposed tos, there's no shoulds. You know, we say to clients, whatever comes up, just let it come. And clients remember things and they process. They process fear and grief, anger, guilt, and shame. We work to keep the processing body focus. You know, where do you feel that? Just notice, it's just a memory. And in the course of processing, a client might imagine saying or doing what they never got to previously say or do, expressing their rage, running away, fighting back with superhuman strength. They might also spontaneously kind of see their younger self and offer compassion or explanation or care or nurturance. And with reprocessing, a client's distress eventually decreases and relevant adaptive bits of information located in other parts of the brain, helpful present-day perspectives get integrated. The client arrives at a place where they're able to really know and feel at the deepest level, it's over, I'm safe now, right? I was only a kid doing the best that I could, right? It wasn't actually my fault. I'm okay, I'm worthwhile. And finally, I'll just say that EMDR is a comprehensive treatment. It's a psychotherapy, it's not just a technique. And it addresses past traumatic experiences and current triggers and symptoms. And eventually we get to a place where we've cleared out the past, we've neutralized those present triggers, and we help the client to begin to visualize and imagine a future, right? We have them imagine with new beliefs about themselves, with new feelings inside. We have them imagine coping in the future, dealing with challenges in the future, and taking initiatives that they've never even considered before in their lives.
All right, that's a really good description. I think one of the things that really sort of brought it home for me is thinking about going back to, if you think about a non-traumatic memory that might get locked in place, is like going back, I went back to my kindergarten school as an adult, and I walked in and I was like, look at these tiny chairs, look at this little toilet, lockers are so small. That memory was not that I had walking in was not my adult memory, it was my child memory, and it was locked in a long-term storage bin that then my adult self was able to see it, and it changed the whole perspective. Like before, right. I saw it, I knew that they were small. It was a kindergarten class, but I didn't feel it, right? I didn't see it at that level. And so it is that re-remembering, like bringing the traumatic memory out of long-term storage into short-term memory, and then being able to like think of it. And I watched clients go through different stages of like, you mentioned, I am terrified, I am powerless, to like, I'm not that kid anymore. Now I could act differently, right? It's empowering. Right. All right, so Michael, can you, I guess let's go to our first phone call. We have Kristen in Anchor Point. You have a question for my guest today?
Yes, I'm just kind of wondering. I study ancient history and such, and over the millennia, humans have not really reacted very well to each other when outside the group, when responding to the other. And yet there were wars, there were trauma, the infant mortality rate was very high, and it doesn't really matter. I mean, you can go back to prehistoric times or even as far as 150 years ago, the end of the 1800s. War was constant, trauma was constant, disease was constant. I mean, people were like always under some kind of stress or trauma, but society continued to exist. I mean, it wasn't like falling apart. There was, I guess people were always able to just say, okay, it's over, I gotta get on if I'm gonna continue living. Now, I'm just wondering, because in those days, the support group among their culture was greater. Yes. I know that, even though, you know, all a medical person could do was, you know, throw a leech on you or heat a glass bowl and stick that on you and blister you or stuff like that. But there were people who were always, who cared about what the patient thought, there was always family, and if not just family, even the general society always showed a certain amount of support for the people around them. And I know that religion had a lot to do with it, the teaching of, you know, you are each other's brothers and need to care for each other. And just the concept of we're in this together was helpful. But what has changed so much now that, you know, just, I mean, so, I know some people go under incredibly stressful things, and they really do bounce back. They just really just, you know, this has happened, it's over, it's time to get on with my life, with my family, my friends, my community, and I'm going to go out there and do the best I can, while others are, like, in the corner whimpering and carrying on, and no matter what you try to do, you can't seem to break through to them.
Yeah, what's the difference, Kristen? And I'm going to let Dr. Korn take a crack at that. What's the difference in the people who develop PTSD? Is there a predisposition? Mm. And also, is there more trauma now? Because back in the Civil War, it was called soldier's heart, right? Then it was battle fatigue. Then it was shell shock. But this has been, trauma has been evident. I mean, she's right. Trauma exists in our society, in our world, and it's anxiety exists for a reason, anger, all these emotions. But is trauma more frequent, or are we just more aware and learned a lot more and were able to diagnose? Because there was a lot of dysfunctional people running around who were beaten as children and raped and murdered in wars. Mm-hmm. I guess they're not running around if they're murdered, but you get my point. Like, bad things happen, and people were addicted and angry and anxious. Can you address some of Kristen's great question?
Yeah, so first of all, I just want to thank Kristen for her masterclass in 2 minutes, just covering trauma over the centuries,
right,
and trauma across cultures. I really appreciate her perspective. You know, there are many different factors that influence someone's response to a trauma and the likelihood of developing full-blown symptoms, full-blown PTSD. Age, temperament, family dynamics, and the level of social support that someone might receive as they're experiencing trauma, the intensity and the duration of the trauma exposure, genetics, various other resilience factors. So we know that there are multiple factors that really bear down on why one person may develop PTSD, whereas another person might not. And again, trauma is, as I said, objective and subjective. So you could have two people in a serious car accident. Let's say one is a middle-aged demolition derby driver, and the other is a young high school student who just got her license and is traveling with her baby sister in the back seat, right? They are likely to have two very different responses to the same event. The high school student is probably much more vulnerable to developing PTSD because of her age and her experiences. We know that traumatized children and adolescents are much more likely to develop PTSD than traumatized adults. And also, as I said earlier, trauma is cumulative. So the more traumas a person is exposed to, the more likely he or she is to experience serious physical and psychological symptoms. So many of your listeners are probably familiar with the ACE study, a very well-known study that took place originally, I think back in 1995 to 1997, looking at the relationship between exposure to trauma, the number of traumatic exposures, and the outcomes that people experience. And basically an ACE, meaning the ACE score, the how many exposures someone has had.
Adverse an ACE childhood score experiences, of 4,
meaning
right.
exposure to 4 major events, was associated with 2 times the risk of receiving a diagnosis of cancer, a 4-fold increase in emphysema, and a 7-fold, 700% increase in alcoholism, just to pull some of the statistics from that research study. So we know that the effects of trauma are cumulative. The one other thing that I'll say is that we in today's society are bombarded with stressful information, you know, with the internet, with podcasts, with television, with the pace of things being, faster and more intense than ever before. I think there's more exposure to the trauma that's taking part in different parts of our world. You know, within seconds of a school shooting, right, we're seeing images up on screens, we're reading in the newspaper. So I think there's levels, you know, there's always been stress, there's always been trauma, as your caller said. But I think, you know, we're getting bombarded with exposure to trauma in so many different parts of our world, not just our small little microcosms. And also, we live pretty solitary lives these days compared to the way we lived in days gone by, right? We don't live in villages anymore, surrounded by our family, surrounded by, you know, where we know our neighbors, we know our community. And I think in those days, back in those days, people had rituals, they had processes that they engaged in as communities, where people were able to grieve together, they were able to process together, they received validation and recognition for what they were enduring individually or as a community. I think that happened much more in days gone by than it does in today's society.
All that's very, very true. And those are great points. Thank you for that. I do want to, like you mentioned, one point that I want to touch on is that bombardment of traumatic images. I did a show on secondary trauma and from frontline workers and even from media folks who cover car accidents and school shootings. And a lot of their symptoms, they have PTSD symptoms from looking at these images over and over and over and going to these events where people died. And that bombardment, I tell people with a lot of anxiety, like, you got to get offline.
Absolutely.
You can't keep looking at this stuff. All right, we're at our second break. And when we come back, I want to hear more from Michael about his personal experience with it and what kind of shifts he had. And I have a couple of emails that are backed up. So we're going to go ahead and take our second break. If you're just joining us, my guests today are Michael Baldwin and psychologist Dr. Deborah Korn. We are discussing their book that they wrote collaboratively, Every Memory Deserves Respect, EMDR, the Proven Trauma Therapy with the Power to Heal. After this short break, we'll continue with more of our conversation about trauma and EMDR. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you find yourself asking, what's next? The University of Alaska Anchorage can point you in the right direction. With over 100 fully accredited degree programs and certificates to choose from, plus resources to guide you through your academic experience, your future is in your hands. Whether you're starting over or taking your career to the next level, discover what's next at UAA. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Anchorage.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guests are Michael Baldwin and psychologist Dr. Deborah Korn. We are discussing their new book, Every Memory Deserves Respect. That's about EMDR, the proven trauma therapy with the power to heal. If you have a question for my guests or a comment about today's topic, you can reach us in 3 ways. In Anchorage, we can be reached at 907-550-8433. Our toll-free number from anywhere else you might be listening is 1-888-353-5752, and our email is line1@alaskapublic.org. Okay, Michael, can you sort of take us through your EMDR experience kind of quickly and what was different about it, like the shifts you mentioned, really going from intellectually understanding what was going on to feeling it at a more like cellular level, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and actually you use an important word, I think you said intellectual or conversational. So for me, from the very first session with Dr. Magnavita, EMDR was very different because I felt like we were tapping into, like, if you tap to hit the nerve in a tooth that's live and you feel that immediate lightning bolt of unfortunately pain,
right?
And that's the experience I had for the very first time first session with Dr. Magnavita, where it wasn't an intellectual exercise, it wasn't a talk therapy exercise, it was actually tapping into longing and grief and yearning and unhappiness and neglect and abandonment that had started for me pre-verbally. And it was just waves and waves and waves of emotion that was just coming out of me that I had no idea was even in there, which was as surprising to me as anything else that happened in his office. And I mentioned earlier, as an adult, I had symptoms, but never was able to trace them back to the idea or the notion that they had been linked to traumatic events, because I wasn't even aware of trauma. So I had phobias I dealt with as an adult. I had anxiety and depression I dealt with as a result of developmental neglect and also abuse. So I was a sexual abuse survivor, a emotional and physical abuse survivor. And you had mentioned, you talked about bullying earlier. My older brother was a diabolical bully my whole growing up. And I also had, bullies in school. And anyone who knows about bullying knows you live your life in a state of terror because you never, ever, ever feel safe. And it's a horrible, horrible way to have to exist. So over the course of 2 years of Dr. Magnavita, all this trapped, unprocessed stuff came out. And the other amazing thing about the EMDR therapy is it gives you what we refer to in the book as a sight map. So you understand the players in your development. You understand the connections between you and the players in your development. So you have kind of a sight map of your developmental history. And in my case, the best way I can describe the before and after is my operating system before was about dread and anxiety and fear and uncertainty, a conviction that I was worthless, which is why I developed a grandiosity strategy as an adult, and I became a status and achievement junkie. And the operating system that I walked away with was about waking up free of all of those things and just being and experiencing my day and how I felt and what I was going to do that day. So all those things that were plaguing me for as long as I can remember. I mean, I remember waking up in college thinking, why do I have this incredible sense of dread? What is wrong? What is going on? I don't understand this. All that gone. Never had a recurrence of the two nightmares that I had for decades. The same two, equally as intense every time I had them. So in the process with Dr. Magnavita, being able to trace back the origin, the traumatic origin for each of the nightmares, where they came from and what that history and that story was. And once that was uncovered and finally processed, those were gone. Phobias were gone. So I would say the cap for me was the fact that the person who I thought I would never, ever in my life have a relationship with, my brother, who was the bully, who was such a diabolical physical and emotional bully. I just spent my first week with him together, the first time the two of us have spent any time together as brothers. And the Monday of the week we spent together was his 70th birthday.
Wow.
So that's how long we waited. And right now he's the most important relationship in my life. It's the most intimate relationship I have in my life, if you can believe that. I have two other sisters. And that to me is nothing short of a miracle, because I thought it would never, ever, ever happen. And we just came back from a trip with his two daughters that was remarkable. And just feeling what it's like to have a relationship with this person, and I only have one brother, that never would never in a million years ever have been possible. And I should add that he started on his EMDR journey a little over a year ago with a colleague that Debbie recommended. And it's been transformative for him as it has been for me.
Wow, that's really powerful. That image is like of you and your brother and your tormentor becoming your closest intimate relationship. That's really powerful. I want to get to a couple of emails, but first, let me read a couple of emails. Hi, can your panel talk about how or if EMDR would work with preverbal trauma, unremembered cognitively speaking, a common element of complex PTSD? And so, Michael, you just touched on preverbal memory and trauma. Dr. Korn, is it effective with stuff that you can't actually remember?
Yeah, you can't remember. You can't tell a story about it per se.
Right.
You know, preverbal trauma is often experienced in the body. It's experienced, as Michael described, as dread, or as, you know, an impulse to shut down or an impulse to flee, right? It's remembered at that somatic level, and there's not necessarily details or a story that come with it. And that's okay with regard to EMDR. We work with what we have. So if we don't have an image or we don't have a story, we target the felt sense of a memory. Mm-hmm. You know, where do you feel that in your body? And we target that. And we ask, you know, are there words that go with that felt sense? So it might be, I'm going to die. I'm in danger. I'm vulnerable. It might be, I'm bad, right? I'm going to be punished. We work with what we have available to us. And folks are able to experience the same kind of relief dealing with memories that where you don't necessarily have an image or a story.
All right, I'm going to go back to the phones real quick. We have another phone call from Anchorage. Is it Danita? You have a question for my panel?
I do. Thank you so much. I wanted to ask your guest what his experience was like after his first treatment or his first, productive session. What was it like to tap into such emotion and go home and kind of sit with that? And how were you able to get through that part of it?
It's a great question.
Thank you for your question. And I'm happy to tell you that as unpleasant as the wave and wave and wave and waves of you know, it was pretty dramatic emotional experience that first session, because we were tapping into the stuff that had been there forever. But at the end of the session, I felt such unbelievable relief. I felt, you know, I want to say like lancing a boil or something, because, you know, this stuff that had been, this emotion that had been trapped and buried, and I wasn't even aware that it was there. The process of being able to release it through myself, through my body, and then have it be out and feeling like I had two or three more quarts of lung capacity when I would take a deep breath. So to me, it was profound relief. And that was a pattern with Dr. Magnavita every time I saw him.
All right. We're going to unfortunately run out of time. And I will answer the emails. I'm going to have to answer them, I think, off air. But I do want to, like, at line one, we like to make sure that we're giving our listeners reliable, valid health information. And I know PTSD has some, EMDR has some controversy. If you look it up, I don't know if it's controversy, but some skeptics, I would say, about what the mechanism, pretty much all the reviews say, oh, it's helpful. We just don't believe that it's why they say it is. So can you talk about the validity and the, I know it's used with the Department of Veteran Affairs. I mean, the Army used, like it's been validated. Can you talk just briefly about that? What's the science behind it?
Yeah. So most of the controversies about EMDR have been laid to rest over the years. We always used to hear that EMDR didn't have much research to support its use, or that it was only superior to no treatment or to waitlist controls.
Right.
As of, 2022, there are more than 44 randomized controlled trials demonstrating the effectiveness of EMDR for PTSD in civilian adults. So it's considered an evidence-based top-tier treatment for this condition. And it's been compared to many other psychotherapy approaches. And in those studies, we basically see the same level of outcome as other effective treatments, such as trauma-focused CBT, just to name one. But often, in fewer sessions and without the requirement of the client offering a detailed description of events, often without direct challenging of beliefs, and typically without homework. So compared to, for example, prolonged exposure, another treatment for trauma, prolonged exposure requires 1 to 2 hours of homework a day in between office sessions. EMDR requires none. In a recent meta-analysis looking at gold standard research studies, it was determined that not only was EMDR clinically effective, but also the most cost-effective of the 11 trauma therapies evaluated in the treatment of adults with PTSD. So it's effective and efficient. And there's also, it's also true that there's evidence mounting in support of EMDR therapy for PTSD in children and adolescents, for acute PTSD reactions, for combat PTSD, for unipolar depression, chronic pain, and complex PTSD. And as you said, EMDR is strongly recommended as a frontline first tier treatment in the treatment guidelines of organizations around the world, like the World Health Organization, the International Society for Traumatic Stress Studies, the Department of Veteran Affairs, et cetera.
Yeah, I just want to make sure people know that this is, there's some credibility behind it, and there is a lot of research that has gone into it, and it's pretty widely accepted throughout the world.
Yeah.
All right, we are running out of time. I have a caller. You have a brief question for us?
Hello?
Hey, go ahead. You have 10 seconds.
Okay. Where can I find a trusted clinician in the Anchorage Bowl area?
Okay. They would not know that. I would
well,
know.
Well, we can help with that.
We can help with that.
All right. How would somebody look for that?
So first of all, I would encourage folks to go to our website, which is just the name of our book, Every Memory Deserves Respect. And there you will find links to the EMDR International Association, EMDRIA. And the EMDRIA has a directory of EMDR therapists in all 50 states. So you can go and plug in your location and you can find EMDR therapists, within a range of 25 miles, 50 miles. And that would be a really, really good place to start.
All right, Michael, final thoughts, 10 seconds.
I would just say that if you or a loved one, a colleague, a sibling, a relative are in distress, I would go to everymemorydeservesrespect.com, click on Find a Therapist, and don't wait.
All right. Thank you. My thanks to my guests, Michael Baldwin and Dr. Deborah Korn. Thanks for taking the time to join me today. Also, my thanks to my producer, Madeline Rose, and my engineer today, Dave Waldron. Until next time, have a great day, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.